Hey, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Becky, and joining me for this episode is Jenny. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Becky.
And Leah. Hi, Leah.
Hi, Becky.
And Lindsay. Hello, Lindsay.
Hello.
Okay, so we are fired up, I think is the best way to describe this episode tonight, about this book, and not necessarily in the best way. I do want to caveat this with saying that we are not here to rip apart this book. We are not here to, like, be mean or anything like that. These are just our thoughts. You know, we tried to give this book a chance. I do believe the Patreon members are trolling me with their picks, because I say this for Jen Ellen. I would rather read Megan Quinn than this book.
Multiple Megan Quinns.
Yeah. Also, this was like the wildest ride of books. And again, not in the best way. It was just a wild. Yeah. I still am like, what did I just read? So, on tonight's episode, we are reviewing 9-Month Contract by Amy Dawes. Who wants to tell us all the things we need to know before we start?
I will.
Okay.
Okay, so it was originally released April 11th, 2024, but it is being re-released in October 20... Oh, no, it was re-released in October of 2024, sorry. Wrong year.
Yeah, but the paperback doesn't come out until March.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
But because it was acquired by Canary Street, which is a subset of Harlequin. The tropes are close proximity, matchmaker, pregnancy pack / surrogacy, grumpy sunshine, although I would not necessarily call her sunshine. But she kind of is, but kind of isn't. But anyway, the series is the Mountain Men Matchmaker series. It is a series of standalones. It is multi-first-person point of view, because you do get more than just two. The put-out percentage is 56%. And the audio narrators, if you do the audiobook, are Teddy Hamilton and Aaron Mallon. And it is in duet formation narration. And it is available in ebook and Kindle Unlimited. And the audio is available in Hoopla.
So I... do you want to talk about the audiobook real quick? I listened to the audio. I borrowed it from Hoopla. Teddy Hamilton sounds like he has a cold.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Through the whole book. And I know that's there sick. Was some issues last year, because I think that was one of the problems with, like, another book that he narrated in that same time frame. The other thing with the audiobook is if you pull up the list of content, the content list, the menu. Okay. It has his name and the name Everly. And you're listening to the first chapter and you realize that Everly is the niece's name. So I spent probably a good 17% of the book thinking that Everly was going to be the surrogate, because we do not meet Trista, the heroine, until like chapter 5 or 6.
Yeah, I was confused as well, because I listened to the audio. I didn't even look at who was, like, I was doing other stuff. So I just, like, turned it on, and then I was confused, because I'm like, his niece is, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't love this duet narration. It's jarring for me at times. It quickly takes me out of the book. But eyeball reading was not going to happen for me on this book.
The duet didn't bother me. That was probably the only thing that I didn't even think about.
Stacy was also confused. She says she didn't know it was a spinoff of a series. It is a spinoff for her Wait For Me series. Mm-hmm. Cozy and the Oldest Brother are the last book in that series, and that spins off to the Brothers on the Mountain.
Yes.
So, and I have to believe, I think that this is scheduled to be a 4-book series, but there's only 3 Brothers on the Mountain.
correct?
So
I don't know if it's four, but there's only three on the.
I would guess the fourth is probably Everly because she's introduced such a strong
character. Yeah.
That's what I think so too. And we'll talk about it. I have some thoughts about Everly. So this is the second book that I did where there's this random third person's POV. Mm-hmm. So I read the Piper Rain book, Mr. Broody, and in that book we get the little kid's POV, like five mm-hmm. or six chapters. It's weird to me. I mean, at least Everly's a grown up. She's 18, although she talks like she's 57.
That's fair.
Yeah, she does.
That's fair.
I don't always like it, but I don't think that it was a bad choice in this book because of the way it was introduced.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I
like, if it was just like a random chapter, like halfway through, then I don't think it would have made any sense at all. But the fact that like it's at the very beginning and like she's the one that introduces a lot of this stuff, I don't think it's necessary, but I don't think it doesn't work at the same time. Yeah.
And as I was doing some research for this book, I saw where like Canary Street, Amy, they're marketing it for the fans of Pippa Grant, Megan Quinn, Tessa Bailey, which, okay. Okay, so, and if we're really honest, we all know that in the rom-com scheme of things, those aren't my authors.
Right.
I like a rom-com with a little bit more meat to the story and less potty humor.
Well,
sometimes I need a good potty humor book, though. Maybe. Just saying.
But it's got to be good potty humor.
Well, this is true.
Right. Yeah. What were you going to say, Lindsay?
There were a lot of things, a lot of choices that were made that were in the vein of rom-com ridiculousness. But the particular choices that were made did not work for me as a reader. Yeah. And like, I went into this book, full caveat, this book was never going to be on my TBR. This was never going to be a book for me just because of like the tropes and the concept. And like, I don't really want a book about surrogacy or things like that. Like, I know that there's audience for that. There's something for everybody. It's not going to be for me. I knew going in it wasn't going to be for me. I tried to be open-minded, had a real hard time.
So this book was not necessarily on my TBR, so to speak. So when we came up with the books we were going to cover in January, we decided to do either Harlequin stabled authors or mm-hmm. authors that had a connection to Harlequin category romances. So Amy had, you know, for a popular trendy book, Amy just got acquired by Canary Street, which is a new house under Harlequin. Next week is Brenda Jackson. She is a stabled category yeah. author. We then, the third week of January, or the whatever week of January, the third one we're doing in January is Nora Roberts, who got her start at Harlequin and has now moved on to like St. Martin's Press. And the last is Maisie Yates. And we talked about it a little bit on Sunday's episode. January is really our response to all the bullshit we saw at the yeah. end of 2024. So
yeah, it really was.
I will say, like, I struggled through this book, as all of us did, although I'm fairly certain Jenny didn't, because she kind of, I'm not gonna
medicated
doubt. She medicated herself.
Well, yeah. But also she had it on, but did she literally pay attention to it?
No, because I missed some things that I should have.
No, I will say, I Leah'd this book and Becky yelled at me.
I did.
But this is one of those books I could not ingest it in order. Like, I actually went to the last, I read probably the first like six chapters, and then I went to like into the 30s somewhere, and then I skipped all the way to the very end. And the last like five chapters I really liked. It might not have been five, but the last like chunk.
The last 17% of the book was like the best part of the whole book. It was
really
book.
Good. Yeah.
And Jen Ellen says maybe third person would have worked better. And I do want to say that. I do think that if authors want to insert another person's POV, a side character's POV into a book, then let's go back to third person head hopping. I feel like that would work better.
It's not as jarring when it happens like that.
No, you're a little more prepared for it.
Well, and I've been in like a Harlequin like intrigue deep dive just because nothing else was really hitting for a while. And so I just went through that. And like most, a lot of them are third person and it is head hopping in those ones. And it's like you get multiple points of view. Like the one that I just finished, there was like four or five different points of view, but it's all third person. So you don't, it's not as chaotic.
Yeah. So I did go looking at reviews, and this review, I feel like, embodies all of my feels of this book. And this is Devin Elizabeth's review. It says, written in the tone of a millennial who goes to TikTok to say, LOL, I'm unhinged. Response, no, you're insufferable. Okay, saying that, let's talk about Trista, because I feel... She's not written to be an unlikable character. You know, like we very much have had authors that write female main characters to be a little harder, a little more unlikable, a little tougher to get to know, right? I don't believe that Trista was written for that purpose. I don't think that as she was created and Amy Dawes was inspired to write her, I don't think she meant to make her unlikable. But this is a book that needed trigger warnings. There is, you know, we're talking about parental neglect, death of a parent. We have fat phobia coming from every space.
Yeah.
And I've been teasing everybody with a very terrible quote from the book about foreskin and who it belongs to and such. And I will share that quote over in the Sip and Discuss channel on Discord. But who read that book and thought that was appropriate?
Well, but who read that book and thought that was funny?
Who edited that book and thought, oh, that's a great quote. We're going to leave that in there.
So yeah, it just keeps going.
I mean, a lot of the stuff that I had issues with were because it completely detracted from my ability to immerse myself into the book as a romance. Like the things that were happening, I was grossed out by a lot of things that happened. Very grossed out. I felt like I needed trigger warnings for some things that were just like inappropriate use of substances, which we'll get into. But like I was so grossed out. Like, I quit. I DNF'd the book. I DNF'd the book at, like, 37% or 40% or whatever. I texted everyone and was like, I just cannot. I cannot continue. I'm so grossed out. I'm so, like, I cannot just so, because of how.
So let's talk about that real quick so we can get this out of the way, because this is kind of, it is the grossest part of this book. Well, one of the grossest parts of this book. And that is that they decide to kind of do a do-it-yourself insemination project. Yeah. And constantly Trista, the heroine, is saying, well, this is how the lesbians online say to do it. And I don't know. I think she was trying to be funny, but it did come off a little homophobic.
Yeah, I'm really
it did feel very insensitive towards people who are going through infertility or are trying to have a child in the best way possible. But what Lindsay was really grossed out about was that it was a children's Tylenol syringe, like, you know, the dropper.
Yeah.
And a ranch cup, like an empty, clear cup.
It could have been called a ramekin. It could have been called a ramekin, but no, you had to call it ranch cup. And you know what? Now my brain is just like, those things are probably the same consistency. Vomit.
Oh,
Lindsay.
I said it. I did it. I
You did, but I did not think that. So well, thank
I
you.
Did, and it ruined everything now... for me. And I'm so upset about it.
I now have to vomit. Lindsay.
Lindsay.
I told you about this. I sent you the vomit emoji. How many times?
I know, but I cannot ever. But I look didn't at like the put same that way again.
We didn't make the connection.
How did you get anywhere other than that? The choices were made and they were aggressive.
See, and all I kept thinking about was like Elmer's glue in a cup.
I was thinking it's sticky. Glue.
You know? Well, I was just thinking, like, the cup is way too freaking small. Well, like,
but also,
I
mean,
okay, you know, also it, his thoughts in his head as he's moving things along, you know, and like, there was no consent for, like, you know, I don't know. I want to say things here, but Michael warned me I'm going to get myself banned if I'm not careful.
We're going to get banned. You just need to stop.
It was
there
just...
were choices made, and Lindsay took that too far.
I'm sorry.
I can see how that connection would be made.
My first instinct when I read that scene was just like, I am really mad that I had to read this book because, like, I am grossed out generally by ranch. I do enjoy ranch dressing on my salad. I don't want it in my sex scene. Ever. No mentions of it. Ever.
Okay, we're going to move on from that. But my understanding is, and Jenny, the surrogacy process in the beginning that they talk about, the way they're screened and things like that, and these at-home kits are things, right? Like, those were accurate.
Right. Like, I was happy with the accuracy of, like, yeah, they're not going to have a surrogate that's never been pregnant. Like, we need to know how your pregnancies go, like, what risk you have. The screening process seemed legit. And yeah, you have to do like the every other day is common, but like you got to do it quick while the stuff's still warm. And yeah, it was accurate as far as insemination.
Okay. So let's move on from that. She gets knocked up. Lindsay, there were farm animals and a pregnancy test that one of the farm animals tried to eat. That was another area. That was when Lindsay said, done.
Yes. Again, this goes to, like, for me personally, this is never going to be a book I read first because of the concept. But then it was like the things that I had issue with were like very targeted things that were going to be an issue for me regardless. Mm-hmm. And I worked in a barn for a very long time. I like managed a stable of horses and farm animals when I was in college. It's like a side job, and like anything that happens in a barn in a romance, I get the smells, I get the sounds, and like all I could do was imagine like little goat pellet poop everywhere while it's choking on the pregnancy test. And like, why are we just willy-nilly attaching pregnancy tests to things? Like, it's a pee stick, people. It's a pee stick.
Well, but people do weird things with their pee sticks. I will fully say.
What did we watch where she like put it in the cake?
It's the secret.
Oh, the Secret Life of Mormon Wives.
Yeah, she puts it in the
like there's intentional like ick when it comes to pregnancy tests and people.
And like I can't see how those situations would be comedic. Like the choices would be comedic, but for me they were just gross.
They were just gross. Okay, so let's talk about Trista as a character and some of the things that worked and didn't work for us with her. I think one of the first things is, and I said this, this book has a lot of fat phobia in it. A lot.
Yeah.
You cannot write a statement that, oh my God, I love my curves. I love my boobs. I love my butt. You cannot write that and then have the character refer to herself 30 plus times as a cow.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. And I do feel that choices were made with him that he absolutely comes off as a chubby chaser.
Yeah.
Like, he talks constantly about her curves and her butt, and like he rubs her butt every time he can. And it was just like, it just had some really weird vibes to it.
Well, I thought it was going to be like a pregnancy fetish because.
Listen, I can get in behind that. I can get behind even breeding kink and pregnancy fetish. I mean, the Winterfell book, he's obsessed with her because she's pregnant and he touches her all the time. But it was written in a way that it was caring and not overly sexualized. And the way it was written in this one, it was more about her being bigger and curvy than it was about her body.
And like the her ones pregnancy. That I've read, like they're very intentional in the way that they react and the way that they talk. And this one, it was almost, I don't even know how to describe it, but it was like almost obnoxious. Well, that's not the good, like the best like way to describe it, but like
I think Trista had, you know, we know she has some deep-rooted issues, but her behaviors were exasperating. That is the best way that I can describe them. The because constantly she was so fighting okay him.
With, yes.
Like she's okay taking the money. Help. Well, and she's okay taking the money.
But she didn't want him to do anything for her.
Right.
I did have problems with her, like, not wanting to take the food because a surrogacy contract often contains like what you can and cannot eat. Like,
yeah.
But she was, you know, the brothers, it was okay for the brothers to help move things up, but he buys her a like bed mom, and she loses like, her she, brain.
Like talks about how like the mom was like helpful and stuff. And like, but anytime he wanted to help, it was a big thing.
I think her character arc, and again, I think this comes down to the way the book is written. The author was trying too hard to be funny. Yeah. So we didn't get a real movement of her character arc. Her character arc, like her growth happens, starts at 92% after she talks to her sister and then ends. Do you know what I mean? Like we get 8% of character
it's
growth.
A switch. Like it's not. It was too fast. Like it wasn't.
There wasn't like an organic moment to it. Like yes, you can have that conversation and things kind of change. But had it happened like sooner in the book and like she slowly started to change her mind, then it would have been more believable. But the fact that like they had a conversation, then she's like, "Oh, okay, well this is the way it's gonna be." It just didn't seem genuine.
Yeah,
because she was so set in her mind, like how like. She was going to live her life. And then like one conversation like changes it.
Well, and her family is so toxic. And we get that for 90% of the book. She is on and on and on about how toxic her family is, which we have read plenty of books with messy, toxic families. Mm-hmm. And the character arc usually happens at a longer pace. Like it's not an instant one phone call that changes. I've read plenty of books where at the beginning of the book, the heroine is not interested in having children and, oh my God, I'm accidentally pregnant. Now what the heck am I going to do? We've all read those books. And over a course of time, with love, connection, nurturing, with the hero, with relationships, she works on things. By the end of the book, she's excited and accepting. And I think of the Jay Salmon one where it's the brother's best friend, Dr.
Mistake.
You know, at the beginning of that book, she didn't want to be pregnant because of her medicines and because of all the other health issues she has. But as the pregnancy goes on and she works through things, she realizes that it's going to be okay. Like, I'm excited for this. Except with Trista, 92%, 91% of the book, she is very clear. I am not interested in having children. I have no relationship with my family. I talk to my sister maybe twice a year. Her sister left her when she was 17. They really are not close. But then we have one conversation with our sister at 91%. It flips a switch and all of a sudden you're like, yeah, I'm going to be a mom.
Well, and all because his sister was like, I got out. I found somebody who loved me for me. It's like there wasn't even... A logic.
Yeah, her sister doesn't have kids. Her sister, yeah.
Yeah.
Her is not influential.
I was saying to Jenny, I wonder if we would have felt different about the switch flipping if she had had that conversation with Everly. Because there was much more emotional connection between Trista yeah. and Everly. If you look at the graduation party and yes. the different pieces, Trista and Everly really connected. And that, I also feel like the randomness of Everly propositioning her in front of the surrogacy office was just weird. Because, you know, I want a young 17-year-old to walk up to me and ask me if I want to be her uncle's surrogate. That's not weird.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that had it been Everly, it would have played out differently and been more believable.
I don't think I would have been as pissed.
I would have liked to see, like, her and Wyatt talk it out more. Like, because from her perspective, like, he just changed, like, from, like, we have an end date to, like, we could do this together. And she's like, I don't want to do this together, like, because I don't want a kid. And then, like, they're like, even after they like fix it, there's no discussion about what that looks like.
Yeah.
And that was one of my hangups with it is like they had conversations, but they didn't really have conversations at the same time. Like, they talked about stuff, but like, there wasn't, I didn't feel that deep connection like when they were having these conversations until the last 8%. Like, I felt like that, like, those like last few chapters were really well done and really well thought out and well written, but the rest of the book, it was just, I didn't know if I was going to believe that they even really liked each other.
I'll be honest, I don't believe in their HEA. I think they're HFN. I don't feel solid in the relationship. And I think part of that is because for 91% of the book, he views her as simply the surrogate, as the cow.
As the cow, yeah.
You know, there, like you said, there was an end date. And I just think, again, like Jenny said, if there had been more conversations, I'm all for miscommunication. But this was no communication. And he was a very compartmentalized hero. He never went outside his box for that person. And there was this other random story piece that I feel like we never really got any conclusion or resolution on. And that's the Robin piece to this book.
Which is icky. It's just icky.
She lived on the mountain. She was sleeping with all three of the other brothers, or with all three of them that are on the mountain.
Yeah.
And when he found out, he kicks her off the mountain. And that's supposedly why he's guarding.
No, he but she kicks was her off also... the mountain because, like, they found out she was married.
Yeah.
And pregnant her husband's baby. Yeah. Who she was trying to, like, he, like, thought that the baby was his. But then the one brother was like, well, wait, it could be mine. And then the other one was like, well, I did her too. It's like, but she was married. So it's like this whole big thing. And it, yeah, I thought that storyline was just wrong on a lot of levels. I did not like that part of the story. Like, I feel like if you wanted there to be some sort of conflict with the brothers, you could have found something else. Or it could have been a girl that they all were interested in, but it never moved past that. And like, she just caused like a struggle between them.
Honestly,
like, the fact that like they were all in this competition to like who could do her, but weren't telling each other.
Honestly, at one point, I thought they were going to, like, talk about a scene that all three of them were in the barn with her. I thought, oh, which, we're going to have group activities in the barn.
It has to be that kind of book.
I mean, why choose? Why choose?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
I mean, I have read that, not in the barn, but I have read that. But it started out as that. Like, there was,
also,
like, purpose to it.
Lindsay, did you get to the part with the creepy donkey?
No. I did not. I have no regrets about where I'm
there.
He makes
regrets like starting the book, but not where I ended.
They're like in the barn having activities, and he makes like it is poignant and pointed out that he makes eye contact with the creepy donkey.
The donkey has like a tongue that sticks out. Like it, it has some kind of disorder where its tongue constantly sticks out.
Yeah.
And he makes eye contact.
I would have had a similar reaction. to everything else. Like, ick. And that's the thing. Like, for me, there was just a lot of gross choices in the start. And I was just like, if it had not been gross to me choices, I don't think I would have had as much of a problem with the book. I don't think it was bad writing.
That's the thing. The writing itself wasn't bad. It was the choices made.
I also think the pacing
were never going to work for me.
I think the pacing of the story doesn't help in any of that either. It's very slow. And again, it was the last 8% where we got the meat of the story, the meat of the character development, the meat of the connection. And I think that was it. It was frustrating. And the thing is, and I know Lindsay, pregnancy pact, that kind of thing, it's not your gig. Pregnancy romances typically aren't your gig.
Right.
But I've read several that I really loved and I really liked. And, you know, I mean, I'm all for a secret baby. Like, and this one, I don't know. Stacey asks, do we know if anything was changed when it was re-released? No, nothing was changed. The new special edition first release paperback from Canary Street will have two bonus chapters and a bonus epilogue that will be new to that. And within six
it's
months,
it's all going to be in the back matter stuff.
Yeah, it'll be in the back matter. And 6 months after the release of the paperback, it will then be available probably for download off her website or in her newsletter. Is there anything else we need to talk about? I wanted to do a dramatic reenactment of the grossest quote that ever happened, but my husband says it'll get us banned from YouTube and we don't want that to happen. So I will share it in the Sip and Discuss channel on Discord. But just remember the picture that I shared over there, because that will help you visualize my dramatic reading. I could make a video of my dramatic reading and putting it in our Discord.
I do want to say
you do that.
One thing.
What's that?
Just one thing. I think that the book, I think the author could have made one choice very differently that would have completely changed the outcome of the book. And instead of doing that home insemination kit, if they had failed with that and then wound up doing it the old-fashioned way, I think that would have been a very different book. I think that would have changed a lot. It would have brought chemistry into the book earlier. Because I thought about this a lot. I was like, why did I not like this? And it was because, like, I didn't feel like the book was a romance.
No.
Go ahead.
There was just no chemistry. There was no connection between them. And I think, like, that one choice, that one change to the book, for me, would have potentially made a big difference. I could have still done without the dang ranch cup.
Well, and ironically that you say that, because I was just looking at the list of other, like, books that you could read if you like this kind of thing. And I think only two or three of them, they don't actually have sex to make the baby.
I was going to say, all of mine, they have the sex to make the baby.
I think I have, like, a couple where they don't. And that's it. Everybody else has the sex.
Is there anything else we need to say about the book before we do our thumbs up, thumbs down?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, Jenny. Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumb sideways, dumpster fire. What do you want to call this?
Something else, and you just need something. You're completely ridiculous. This is a book for you, but I wouldn't recommend it. So I guess I have to say thumbs down.
Lindsay, thumbs up, thumbs down, dumpster fire.
I DNF'd, so thumbs down.
Thumbs down. Leah, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumb sideways, dumpster fire.
I mean, had we not gotten that last 8%, I probably would have said dumpster fire, but it's just a thumbs down. Like, it just is not a book that worked right.
Yeah.
There was a lot of missteps in the choices made. And I think the idea behind it and, like, the story would have been really good had different choices been made.
Do you think, any of the three of you, that you would read the next book? Are you interested in any of the other brothers?
Maybe. I don't know.
I'm a little curious, but I'm not sure I would like. I would probably skim them.
Skim them. Okay.
Yeah.
This was just not for me. I'm not really, again, these over the top rom-coms, Tessa Bailey, Megan Quinn, Pippa Grant, Amy Dawes, they don't always work for me. I just want more connection, more emotion. But if you're looking for the complete ridiculous, the vibes of, you know, completely unhinged, check it out. You might like it. But I do have suggestions of books that if you are looking for something along this lines, but are better, we have books for you. We have recommendations. Josh and Gemma Make a Baby by Sarah Reddy. It's two friends that decide, we really want a baby. Hey, you want to have a baby? Let's have a baby. And they have a baby together. The Surrogate by Penelope Ward. It is angsty AF. This one.
Penelope Ward, so of course
it's Penelope Ward, right? He is a widow. His, unbeknownst to, well, so he and his wife had never had children, but they had had eggs frozen and embryos frozen. And his wife's parents hire a surrogate and use the embryos that they had had frozen. She is pregnant. He finds out about it. And it's just, it's angsty, but it's actually really a great book. And I like Penelope because she's, I mean, I read her when I want angst. Messy. It's kind of like a Candy Steiner. Like, yeah, you know, going messy. In, it's going to be messy and I want the mess. Yeah. So that's one where the surrogacy makes sense. He's not the one that started the process. Strictly Business by Carrie Elks. This is one where they are co-workers. He's the boss. He comes in. It's the first book in the Salinger Brothers series. He comes in and says, you know, hey, they hate each other. But then he sees her looking at IVF brochures. And he's like, huh, what's this? And she's like, oh, you know, I'm getting to that age. I'm thinking about having a baby. And he's like, I'll help you. But we got to do it, you know, the old fashioned way. She's like, oh, OK, sure. You know, and it works, right? Like,
it is cheaper.
And then Undeniably Convenient by Jay Salmon. Two friends decide, you know what? Let's have a baby, but we don't want to be a couple. But they do it together to get the baby.
Yeah.
There's no IVF or anything in that. Go ahead, Leah, because you've read the Mariah Ankeman one, right?
Yeah. So Mariah Ankeman's is book two in her Jackson Family Distillery series. So the heroine is neurospicy and is like has come to the thought process that she's never going to have like a real relationship because people can't handle her. And so, but she wants a baby. So she asked her best friend if he would be the donor, and but they do it the old fashioned way. And as like the process continues, like they do end up falling in love because it's always been kind of there, but like neither one of them like wanted to recognize it. It's friends to lovers, but it does work. And she's extremely neurospicy.
And Mariah Ankeman, I never have an issue with her friends to lovers book.
Yeah.
And I think it's because of the neurospicy that she kind of sprinkles in. Even her characters that are not labeled as neurodivergent, I think we get kind of the coding that's there, and it works.
Well, and there's just such an understanding from him in the way that she thinks and acts and all of those things. And it just, there's another level to the story in that one. I have a bunch, but I'm just going to pull a couple more. So White Lilies by Samantha Christie. This one's a little bit different because the hero is actually married at like for a good chunk of the book, and the heroine is their surrogate. But the heroine, I'm going to spoil it. The wife has cancer and ends up passing away, and the hero and the heroine end up falling in love. the wife chose the heroine as the surrogate, and basically like because she thought that he would be a good match with her. It's really emotional. It's a little bit messy, but honestly, if you've read Samantha Christie, it's they're all a little emotional and messy.
Just a bit.
Another one is The Daddy Bargain by Crystal Caswell. This one is part of her Inked Love series, I think. I can't remember, but it's brothers. So the heroine is the younger sister of the hero's, one of the hero's best friends, and she wants a baby. So she asks him to get her pregnant. And he's like, I just can't do this because she's my best friend's little sister, but he gives in and it's a little messy as well, but it's delightful. It's been a while since I read that one. And then I'm just going to name a couple more. Meg, Make Me Beg by Julie Chris, The Baby Maker by Lily Valenti, Rebel Soul by L.K. Farlow, Call Me Crazy by Melanie Harlow. That's her in her Bellamy Creek
Well, and
series.
I'll list all of these. I'll put this whole list over on the website and are on the
And
shelf show
there's a
notes.
couple more, but there's definitely a lot more options that have better storylines to them.
Do Lindsay or Jenny, do either one of you have a book that falls into this?
I have a series, so Jacinda Wilder, like in the vein of a rom-com one,
Oh,
Jacinda
yeah.
Wilder did The Billionaire Baby Club, and I actually loved that. They're all very successful women in Hollywood, running a real estate firm, and they're looking specifically for billionaires to basically be sperm donors.
That's such a good series. It's
It
so
really
underrated.
is, and it's rom-com, and it's like a very appropriate kind of rom-com for this kind of topic. It's really good. That series
I
is
wonder if
fun.
they're going to go back into that series because they didn't finish
They
it.
didn't. We only got three, and I think there were four or five friends, right? We'll have to ask
I
them.
think there was five of them.
Yeah, but they literally put out a newspaper ad looking for a billionaire, and like they get very rich. Like they're not all billionaires, but like
That is a really good series. I didn't even think about that when I was looking
that
for
is a
it.
good series. Okay, so that ends our discussion on 9-month contract. Again, this just wasn't the book for us, and not every book is for everybody. I hope we didn't hurt anyone's feelings, who loved this book. Sorry if we did. Tried not to be completely unhinged, right? We did good.
I think we were okay.
I
You what?
did not try. Lindsay did not try.
Lindsay didn't even try. Okay, so we are back. Oh
Lindsay's like, so have you? Kylie Kelce has her podcast, but she was talking about things that are out, and one of her outs is giving a fuck. Apparently, one of Lindsay's out for 2025 is giving a fuck.
goodness. It's this we are off to a start this year. Okay, so we are back on Sunday night. We are going to have some special guests to come hang out with us. They are all Harlequin category authors. I'm not 100% who all is in the group that's coming, but I do know it's Maisie Yates and friends, basically. She invited her friends. I'm super excited for the opportunity to talk with them. I love category.
I do too.
It's, you know, and so I'm excited for the opportunity to talk to these authors that write this and have been doing it successfully. I think Maisie Yates said she's been writing category for 25 years. So, I mean, great for her. I'm excited.
But you know, it's all AI.
Right. Yeah.
I
Only if
had
you were
to. I couldn't let it
born
go.
after 2003. Would you say that? Okay. And then we are back next Wednesday, where we continue kind of our Harlequin theme with a much better book. I have read this. I have read the audio. It's available in Hoopla. I have finished it. And I love this family. Like, I would like to be adopted into this family. And so we are reading The Rancher's Return by Brenda Jackson. This is a Harlequin desire.
I think so.
It's a Harlequin Desire series. It's part of the Westmoreland legacy. Anyway, they're ranchers. He's a cow rancher on this one. Sometimes
It
they're
doesn't
sheep
say on the cover.
ranchers. It's so good. I'm so excited to chat about this, and I'm a Brenda mm-hmm. Jackson stan, you know. So anyway, Lindsay's like, oh my God. I can't wait
She's
to talk
about the barn sex.
There,
yes, Harlequin Desire.
Yeah,
I know. No, I'm all over it. I'm over it. I read a murder book after, or like I picked up a comfort read for me that had murder, and I felt a lot better.
I read a murder book, and now I feel better.
There's a quote for you.
Nope, we do not need therapy in this group. Yes, Cece, we kind of are in Colorado. The first two books, this book, The 9-Month Contract, takes place in Colorado, and now the Brenda Jackson book takes place in Colorado. So,
Amanda, write it down so we don't forget.
Right. I read a murder book. Now I'm okay. A sexy murder book, and I'm good. Was there sexy times in your murder book?
Yeah, it was. It was a romantic suspense with murder.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like
sex and murder, and I'm a good person.
Right?
And Jenny's like, what is good wrong with you mood. Guys?
Not really. They're not really good for any mood, but they're good for a lot of moods.
I feel my spiciest after a good murder book.
Nothing gets me going like a good murder book.
Right? Watch out, world. Here I come. I read a murder book. Oh, Lindsay.
They're going to ban us.
They're so going to ban us. But I didn't do my dramatic reenactment, so I think we're okay.
That's true. Yeah. Just a lot of murder talk.
Just a lot of murder talk.
It happens.
Okay. I just looked down at my sheet and it says Becky's thoughts. Cringy, the word. Okay. Anyway, that's it for this episode. Thank you everyone for hanging out and joining us. I hope you'll be back here Wednesday night when we get to talk to our friend Maisie Yates and her friends, and then back next Wednesday for The Rancher's Return. Until next time, everybody.
Happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at @BuzzingAboutRomance or on Twitter at @BuzzingRomance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.